This is another special edition. Special edition of the Vision Recording Studios podcast. Here on visionrecordingstudios.com.
Hey, good evening once again, everyone, to the VisionRecordingStudios.com podcast. I'm your host, as always, David Vignola, and tonight is part two of our three-part series on the whole topic of music licensing and publishing, and tonight we are speaking with a gentleman named Tom Rule, and Tom is going to be talking to me from the musician's perspective on how you get involved in licensing and publishing, and this is for all our newbies who want to learn how to license their music to TV and film. Last week we spoke to Randy Spencer from Pitch Music, got the company's perspective. Now this week we're going to get the musician's perspective. So sit back, relax. Me and Tom had a really good conversation, talked about a lot of stuff. Get out a pen and a pad, take some notes, and enjoy the interview right now on VisionRecordingStudios.com. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to VisionRecordingStudios.com podcast. And tonight we have another special guest on the phone, kind of continuing our music licensing and publishing series, which is kind of an information, three-part information series for all you Connecticut musicians to learn how to make money with your music outside of just selling CDs at gigs. And I have Tom Rule on the phone tonight. Tom, how are you?
Doing all right, man.
Thanks, man, for spending some time. I know you're busy. I appreciate you taking the time out. Now, Tom is someone who is, last week we spoke to Randy Spencer out of Pitch Music, talked a little bit about what music licensing is from the music licensing company's perspective. And this week we're talking to Tom about actually how do you get involved with music licensing. And he's kind of jumped in and he's doing it and kind of maybe give you the musician or the artist perspective as well. So Tom, let's start off by just maybe starting from the beginning here. How long have you been playing music and teaching music? And I see on your website, which we'll mention in a few minutes, that you also teach music, but can you tell our listeners how long you've been kind of a musician and how long you've been teaching?
Longer than I want to admit. No. I've been playing, I tell some of my younger students, I've been playing piano for 42 years and their eyes get really big. But professionally, since my 20s, so about 30 years or so, got a master's degree in piano performance and landed here in Macon, Georgia. You know, grew up in Tennessee, went to school in University of South Carolina, and then landed here in Georgia for a job. And, you know, been freelancing for the past 8 or 9 years, just doing a lot of different things, most of them musical related, some computer related. But it's a real hodgepodge thing. I teach, I perform with 3 or 4 bands, and in my church, I'm on staff there as well. So a little bit of this, a little bit of that.
Wow, very cool. So now what type of music do you write? I know you play piano, you said, and you can check out Tom on his website. Well, let's get that out of the way right now, Tom, before I forget. It's www.tomrule.info. You can go check out everything Tom is doing. But Tom, tell us, what kind of music do you kind of write typically? What is your kind of style, if you will?
That's one I've never been able to answer. I'm a real eclectic guy, which everybody tells you don't ever say that. But I've been writing just what strikes my fancy, and I'll take an idea and just run with it. Probably more toward the jazz arena.
Okay.
But you know, I'm kind of a traditionalist in terms of categories. There, it's not traditional jazz, so. I actually played a couple of tracks off my last album for a music appreciation class and said, okay, what style is this? And nobody could give me an answer. Hmm. And we had spent the entire semester talking about style. And finally somebody said, well, it's kind of islandy. So I would welcome anybody's comment who listens to the latest album and let me know what style it is, because I don't know.
So you can pick up your album on your website, tomrule.info, right? So people should go out there and check out his music and shoot him an email and let him know what style of music you think it is. Maybe you've created your own new genre and you just don't know it, Tom.
Or I'm so confused, I don't know what planet I'm on. Either way, I'm fine with that.
Hey, either way, it's all good. It's all good. Okay, so let's jump into now. You also license music, and I know from some of our offline emails and such that you're getting into the whole world of music licensing and music placement. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. So,
or at least trying to.
Yeah. No. Hey, join the club, right? So that's what this whole show is about, Tom. We're really trying to get people who really don't know what this is, and I think after last week's episode, they kind of have an idea what the heck music licensing is. But the big question is, and I just had a client in my studio this afternoon asking me this, well, you know, how do I get involved? You got, you know, copywriting and PROs and, you know, this and that. And it just gets, everyone gets so overwhelmed, and it's not as difficult as people make it seem to think it is. But there is a lot to it if you've never done it before. So how did you discover the whole world of music licensing? How did you figure out, hey, this is a way that I might be able to make money with music as another revenue stream as an artist?
Yeah, it really started for me I was trying to find a way to make money without taking on yet another job. I work 7 or 8 part-time jobs, depending on how you divvy it up, and between 2 colleges and the church and all that kind of stuff. So I was looking for a way to generate income without taking on yet another job, and that's when I ran across the licensing. I've been an ASCAP member for a good long while now, since 1999, and so the PRO issue was already settled. And I started, you know, hearing some of this licensing buzz about 3, 4, 5 years ago, I guess, and started looking into it. I think what makes it so challenging is there's tons and tons of information, and it's tough to really decide, okay, what's important and what applies to me. Because for me, you know, I'm not trying to make this my only thing I do. It's yet another income stream. I'm creating this music because that is what I do as a musician. And as musicians, generally we have that drive to create, whether it makes sense or not.
Right. Good point.
Yeah, you know, I've got to create.
Right,
you know.
Right.
Some people hear the call of the pizza. We hear the call of the studio.
Right.
That was part of it. Okay, I've written this stuff. I think it's pretty good. Is it? So at that point, with the web and the way the business has gone the last 3 years or so, there's tons of samples online. You can go see, okay, is my stuff good enough to get into these libraries? And I listened to it, and I thought, you know, I think it is.
Right.
Some of it was much better than mine. Some of it, I'm thinking, I could throw that together in 15 minutes.
Right.
So I thought, what the hey? And this is something I learned from my wife. You know, at some point you say, you know, the worst thing that can happen is they could say no, and you're out some time and maybe a few stamps.
Right.
And so that's really what started it. I picked some of the tunes that I had created and sent them off to some libraries, and some of them said no, and a couple of them said, you know, we're going to add you to the library. So that's where it started.
Right. So, and for people, just to take one step back, and that's great. If people, and this was in the last episode, but I guess I should rehash it again, because you made a very good point, Tom, that a lot of times there's so much information out there about this topic. And a lot of it's bad information, and so much, you have to see, if you go on, you know, with the world of the internet, you got to go online and look at Google, all this stuff. You'll spend your whole life reading about what you need to know about this part of the business and what you don't. And I think it discourages a lot of people. But in a nutshell, what music licensing is all about, in a way you could collect an extra revenue stream, as Tom put it, is anytime you have a piece of music that's either a part of a television commercial, a television program, a movie, a jingle, even could be, it doesn't have to necessarily be picture visual, it could also be a radio spot type jingle. Anytime you create music and someone licenses that music from you for that purpose, you get paid as the artist that creates that music. So that's one way that you can make money, along with all the other ways you make money as an artist. So that's what it's all about. And what Tom is saying, I think what you're saying there, Tom, is you just went out there and you said, hey, look, I listen to some of this stuff on the libraries, and my stuff is equally as good. And what the heck? Let me try putting it out there and just see what happens. So basically, what did you do? Take me from the beginning. So what, you had a couple of tracks off, like, say, one of your CDs, and you just submitted it. How did you go about, which music libraries did you submit to, or how did you find them? And did you create new music? How did you go all about that? Now you got, you know, if I'm a newbie and I'm going, okay, I want to license my music, what the heck's next, I guess, is the question, right? That's what they want to know. What's next?
Really, and there are so many libraries out there. I just did a Google search for music library, 78 million hits.
Yeah, right.
and how many of these are legit? You know,
right.
There are some scuzz balls out there, and but then there are a lot of legit ones. And for me, it started with LinkedIn. There is the LinkedIn group, and I'm sorry, it just the name of it just flew. The music licensing group, that's where we connected.
Right, that's right.
On LinkedIn.
Right.
And a lot of people were mentioning some libraries here and this and that, and I like this one, I don't like this one and the other. And that gave me a jumping off point. There is a guy that I've worked with, Aaron Davison, with Renegade Music up in Chicago, and I connected with him, I don't know how, it's been a year, but he has gotten into licensing, and he's actually starting to pitch songs to other licenses, and so he's basically starting up his own business. I connected with him, so he's been pitching a few of mine, a few tracks of mine, and that was just a few emails back and forth, and we thought it would be mutually beneficial.
Right.
So it's really a Duke's mixture. Join a group. The LinkedIn group has been real good for me, and I'm reading these entries, not necessarily, you know, to join the conversation, although sometimes I do, but when people mention a library, okay, I'll go check that library out. If it looks like they're legit and it looks like my stuff may fit, then I might go, you know, submit to them. I'm still in the very, very beginning stages of this. I haven't had no placements yet, but you know, this is not a sprint. This is a marathon.
Right.
So I don't look to become rich overnight. I'd settle for paying a few bills over the next few years.
Right. Well, you know,
probably more realistic.
Yeah, you know, you got to start somewhere, and it's okay that you haven't gotten any placements yet, because from what I've only been doing this probably maybe, Tom, a couple more years than yourself, and I've only gotten a handful of placements. Mm-hmm. And what I've learned is let's take a step back. First, very good points. If people want to know how to get into this, before I share my story with everybody, I want to keep people on track. So how do I get into this? Well, Tom just made a couple of good points. Go out to the social networking sites. Start with LinkedIn. Facebook could be another one. I mean, geez, everyone in the world's on Facebook. Get into the circles of people online that either want to do this kind of thing, music licensing, or actually do it. And as Tom said, read some posts. You know, connect with some people. That's how Tom and myself had met. I put a post on there saying, hey, I'm doing this podcast series about music licensing. I got to educate my listeners and my clients. And Tom said, hey, let me come on and talk about it. I'm new at it too, and maybe I can give some people some help. So that relationship wouldn't have fostered if it wasn't for LinkedIn. So those are excellent points. So now you got yourself...
There's a couple other issues. You can also, I mean, there's plenty of guys who are doing just like yourself, trying to help other people out. I've run across John Ojaka. Get the spelling, Ozajaca. He's gotten into this, and he has a website, musicmarketingmanifesto.com. I've learned some stuff off of that. And he's got some good information on there. And then there's howtolicenseyourmusic.com, and that's Aaron Davidson's site. And he sells some ebooks and whatnot, but he also has articles and things like that. I mean, there's paid ways to speed up the process, and then there's free ways. It's free, but it takes you a little longer to get it,
sure.
Get the information. But tons of options for learning this stuff. It really is.
Yeah, there is a lot. And like you said, you could read articles, you could read blogs, you could talk to other musicians who are doing it themselves, or people... that are in the business, you know, that are part of the music licensing companies, which is what we had on our show a couple of weeks ago. So now you've just been starting this, Tom, and you haven't had anything placed yet, and that's there's nothing wrong with that. It takes about a year, from what I'm told, it takes about a year from the time I got into music licensing to understand all the ins and outs and which libraries work and everything that we talked about before I got my first placement. So it does take a little time, and it does take a little bit of legwork on the artist end to get stuff, you know, placed. It's not just, you know, throw your song out there and all of a sudden it's in a major motion picture, although I'm sure that does happen to some lucky people, just not me.
Mm-hmm. Not me either, I know.
So now... You went online, you talked to some people, you read about some posting. Would you take like a handful of libraries, you'd say? How many have you submitted to at this point?
Well, I started with one. But let's see. I've got the list here. I've submitted to 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and three of them have said no thanks. But I'm in Indie Tracks, and Music X-Ray has got a few things. Aaron Davidson with Renegade Music's got some, and I'm in with WAP, Mark Allen Wolf's library.
Right.
But and that one's actually based out of London, which is kind of cool.
Right.
So the tracks are there, but each publisher of those, each one had a different process, a different procedure, a different set of things that they wanted. WAP especially, what they wanted me to upload the WAV files, not MP3s, but WAVs.
Right.
And they also wanted a spreadsheet with a detailed list of tacks, mood, tempo, orchestration, and the mood was really, and what it sounds like. And they plopped those into the database. You know, I understood why, but that was a lot of work and a lot of thinking. You know, what does this music actually sound like?
Right, and that's a very good point. And some of these libraries, I'm with a few of the ones you mentioned myself, among a bunch of others. And what I found is that the libraries that tend to ask for all that information, from what I've read and some of the successes that I have, typically, at least in my experience, seem to be the ones that generate, it seems to get more traffic as far as, for me, I had a better chance of getting placed by someone who really wanted to know that detail, because it seems like that they had maybe some, I don't know, I wouldn't say inside connection, but they seem to really, you know, be in the business a long time and really understood what you really needed as far as the song information to shop that to their clients, if that makes any sense. Where some of the other ones, where they didn't ask anything, they just wanted you to send in a CD with some WAV files on it, you never hear from them again. So I don't know, right, if there's a pattern to that, or I guess sometimes it's a crapshoot. Like you said, you really don't know who's for real and who isn't, except through referrals, maybe, you know, to kind of weed out the good ones from the bad ones.
Yeah, you know, again, the social media helps. There's a Music Library Report, I think is the name of the site, and that's a paid site. But they, a lot of reports on the music, various music libraries, which ones are good, and it's from other musicians' things. I think with the tagging, what's interesting, if you look at it from, I had a conversation with a music supervisor, you know, their life is just crazy. Look at this phone call from a movie producer or a TV producer, whoever, say, hey, I need a score, and it needs to be this long, and it needs to sound like such and so.
Right.
And you have 20 minutes to get it to me. Well, of course, they're going to be tagging, searching the tags. And so I think that's where the tagging really comes into play. It makes it easier for these music supervisors to find the track. So
right.
It was a hassle to come up with all those tags, but I viewed it as a long-term benefit.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, because once the information's in there, it's in there forever, at least with that particular library. So it's probably a great idea for someone who's getting into this to not, you know, not just glaze over those types of questions when you're uploading your music. And I think you made the point, Tom, that some of these sites, it takes a long time to upload, say, 10 songs from your disc up to one of these sites. It could take a handful of hours, depending on your internet connection speed and all that other stuff, but just the information that you have to put in for each song is somewhat painstaking. But at the end, I think, like you just said, it's well worth to make sure you do that accurately, and give yourself the best chance of being searched out by a music supervisor who's looking for something pretty quick. They don't have a week to find the song normally. That's not
right.
That's not usually how it works. So now that you've started to submit all this stuff and you're kind of waiting to see what happens with that stuff, were those songs things that you already had crafted off your original music, or did you write some new, you know, specific music based on maybe some listings that you might have saw? How did you go about all of that when you first started submitting music?
It's been a hodgepodge. I had the band at church recorded a couple of albums back in 99 and 2003, and so some of them are Christmas tunes, so original arrangements of mine. So some of them are mine from those. Others are things that I've been just recording because I wanted to over the last 5, 6, 7 years. I've got a whole file full of ideas that I want to get to. So that's what I was saying, the drive to create. just not for any particular purpose.
Right.
The last album that I put out last month came from exactly that. I was a collection of tracks that I just recorded because it was kind of cool music. And poof, then there you have an album after a year and a half. So
right, yeah.
So I know there are people who write for specific things. You know, I'm going to write this particular, try to get it into this particular, you know, football game or whatever. I don't do that. I come up with stuff and write it and record it and do all that in the studio and then try to find a venue for it. That's just how I'm going about it.
Right, right. And that is definitely one way to go about it. And I know lots of people, including myself, that do that. And the other thing that people can try as well, and one website I recommend to people only because if you're a beginner or a newbie at this kind of music licensing, it kind of gives you a real inside scoop to what the marketplace is really looking for, you know, because times change, musical trends change, and then the demand for certain styles of music kind of go in and out like like fads at times. And that is taxi.com, and that is a paid service if you want to be a member. However, if you just want to poke around the sites and see examples of listings without being able to submit your music as a non-member, you could kind of check that out as a resource because it has very specific listings for clients that are actively looking for music. And what they do is they break it down to tell you really in detail what kind of music they're looking for. They kind of 9 out of 10 times will reference mainstream artists, sounds like so-and-so, so you kind of get a feel for what the vibe is and what kind of track they're looking for. And it kind of gives you know, someone who's new at this game kind of an inside look to, hey, what exactly do these companies look for, whether it be a television company or a film company? What kind of music and what kind of ads or listings are they doing? Because that's going to be the same kind of music they're looking for when they're going to libraries and searching for certain kinds of songs. I mean, it kind of gives you an extra resource. And they have a great user form there as well, which I think you can create a profile for free. You don't have to pay anything. And you can go on the user form and you can meet all kinds of people who are actual members of Taxi. And they're very, very helpful as well. So that's another good resource for people to check out. Now, one thing we didn't cover here, Tom, and we should probably mention, and I know you know this as someone who's now pitching music, is that, and I mentioned this in last week's episode too, but it's worth saying again, and I tell artists this all the time, before you start putting all your original music either A, online, or sending it off to music libraries, there's a couple of things you got to do to protect yourself. One is you have to copyright your music. Wouldn't you agree with that, Tom? That's something that most people find that a hassle, and I don't understand why, because it's one of the simplest things you can do. It's certainly one of the cheapest things you can do from a legal perspective. And it's really one of the first things I think you ought to do. Would you agree with that?
I'm kind of on the fence with that. Legally speaking, copyright exists from the moment of creation.
Right.
So the moment you put it in a tangible form, it's copyrighted. However, you have no legal proof that it existed as of this date.
Right.
So that's really where the registration comes in. I've heard, you know, what you need to do is get a group of them together and copyright them as a group.
Correct.
That way, you know, you get one fee for the whole batch. I've had some people say, but if you ever, you know, have to separate them out, it's a pain and all that. So I have as yet to send off the registration because that project hasn't bubbled to the top of the list yet. But I agree it is an important thing. And that is something I'm going to be doing, and it's one of my New Year's resolutions.
Calling all Connecticut musicians and bands. Have you been searching for a quality recording studio with cool vibe, friendly staff, and affordable prices? Then check out Vision Recording Studios. Vision Recording Studios. Located in Naugatuck, Connecticut, Vision Recording Studios is a one-stop shop for all your recording needs. We offer a full line of services, including demo and full-length CD productions, live multi-track recordings of your live performance, music publishing and licensing, live sound reinforcement, artist development, and much more. Visit our website today at www.visionrecordingstudios.com or call us at 203-893-1448. Call us today. You'll be glad you did.
Yeah, no, it is, and you're right. You're absolutely right. You could do it as a collection of music. It's one. I think it's if you do it online, I think it's $35. If you do it through the snail mail, I think it's $40 or $45 for a collection of songs. And that collection could be one song through. I don't think there's a cap. I know it's at least 10 or 15, but I don't think there's a cap as a collection. If you were to do each song individually, you'd get hit with a $35 fee for each individual song. And I do the same thing with as a collection. I don't do each individual song. But what you want to be aware of, and what our listeners want to be aware of too, is that there are a lot of companies that won't use your music if it's not copyrighted and it's not cleared. So that's not true across the board, but a lot of the major networks, for instance, ABC, for example, I know for a fact, because I've had music on ABC, they will not use your music if it hasn't been copyrighted. They need to know that that is copyrighted. So the second thing you want to do after that, is you want to register with a PRO. And Tom, you mentioned you're a member of ASCAP. I'm a member of BMI, and everyone asks me, A, what are those PROs? And B, what the heck is the difference between ASCAP and BMI? I can answer the first one. Maybe you can answer the second one. The first one, PRO.
This will be interesting. I actually had a student ask me, and I said, okay, I can give you the ASCAP story, but you'll have to talk to somebody else about BMI.
Yeah,
I
can give the BMI story, but a PRO in general is a performance right organization, and what I tell, and all my clients ask me, they think that's copywriting, and what I want to make sure people are clear on is those are two totally different things. Copywriting and registering with a PRO are not in the same. They're not the same government body. They're not even close. They're in two different planets. So look at it that way. It's two separate entities. So copywriting protects you from a legal perspective, so someone can't, you know, steal your song, and that's about the simplest way I can say it, but there's a ton of detail which we won't have to get into here.
Right. Copywriting basically proves that the song existed as of a particular date.
Right, and who's the creator?
That's a good synopsis.
Yeah, who's the creator of it? A PRO, a performance right organization, is really an organization that collects royalties on your behalf for when music, for example, is used, let's say, in a television commercial. The PRO, whether it be ASCAP, BMI, or CSAC is the third one, but the two more mainstream ones are ASCAP and BMI. They collect those royalties on your PF, and then every quarter, I think ASCAP is every quarter as well, cuts you a check for any royalties that were collected on your behalf.
Right.
Now the question, and you have to do that if you want to get royalties, you have to register with a PRO. You have to. You're not going to get any money on the back end of a commercial being aired, let's say 10 times over the course of, say, 4 or 5 weeks. Every time that commercial airs, you're going to get a royalty. If you're not registered with a PRO, you're not going to get a royalty. It's really kind of that simple. Now, the difference between ASCAP and BMI, when I signed up for BMI, I only signed up for BMI because I knew someone that was a BMI member. I didn't know that, you know, it was just easier for me when I was first learning. He was a BMI member, so I became a BMI member. I know there's some differences, and I think it's around maybe when the payouts of royalties are paid, and there's some other small subtleties, I believe, but I don't think there's a major difference between the two organizations, Tom. Do you know any different than that? Or?
Well, in terms of history, you know, BMI was founded by the broadcast industry. ASCAP was founded by artists and composers and publishers. I've seen somewhere on LinkedIn somebody who had two publishing companies, one BMI and one ASCAP. For those listeners who don't know, a publishing company has to be affiliated with one or the other. So like a friend of mine, Joey Stuckey, he's got two official publishing companies. One's associated with BMI. He's a BMI writer. One's associated with ASCAP.
Right.
But on the LinkedIn group, somebody who had, you know, a situation like that, they were saying their BMI payouts were higher, but they didn't specify any numbers, and they had this vague feeling. I'm an ASCAP writer because I was head of the music department for college for a while, and the college paid a blanket license fee to all three PROs, ASCAP, BMI, and CSAC. ASCAP was the only one that ever asked me, hey, let us know what pieces were performed on your campus so we can credit the writers. BMI and CSAC just took the money and ran. And I guess they assumed from sampling or what, but, you know, we didn't have a college radio station, the college didn't. And so that's really started me toward the ASCAP path, and I've been pretty happy with it, but it's not like it's been, you know, the savior of my life or anything, but it's been a good organization, and I understand BMI is good as well.
Yeah, so I guess maybe our advice here, Tom, should just be to people, you know, go out to each one of their websites, and I'll put all the links in our podcast page, and I've put them there before. If anyone that's familiar with my show, I have both those links up there on several episodes. Go to the websites, check them out. You can contact each one of those companies, ask questions. I'm sure they all have a frequently asked questions page. I'm sure like BMI ASCAP has a phone number you can call and you can speak to someone.
I would strongly suggest that and ask them and say, look, why should I join ASCAP or why should I join BMI and see what they say. See, you know, which one will fit your career best.
That's a great point. And, you know, and if you're in a band or you're a duo or something of that nature, I've also heard it may not be a bad idea to have a member of your group, maybe on one PRO and the other one on another. Kind of keeps them honest. If one shows up with a check and one doesn't, you know, you may avoid some of what you were just talking about, Tom, about BMI and CSAC taking the money and run. Well, if you and I are in a group together and we license a song as a duo and you end up with a check and I don't, that's, hey, you can get on the phone with your PR and go, wait a minute, you know, we're both equal writers here. How come, you know, so that might be a way just to kind of keep everybody honest, not that there's anything dishonest going on, but it's just another way of looking at it. So once you have everything copyrighted, you have the PRO and you get online and you're doing your research to find some music libraries to send your music to, and then you ultimately will, you know, pick a few places you want to send your stuff out to. You get online, you upload or figure out based on their website, how do they take music? How do they welcome submissions of music, and what's their protocol, and follow that protocol. And every library is a little different. No two are the same, is from what I found out. And then you just keep creating music. So now you got your music's out there, Tom, and you're hoping that something's going to get played soon. So for someone who just wants to, or is even thinking about starting getting into this, you know, we've talked about a lot of little detail here. What advice do you have for him as far as, hey, look, this is what, you know, let me save you a few steps and, you know, try this. You know, what advice do you have?
I think, first of all, don't assume you have to know everything, because you can't. You would spend years learning, and then you would never create. So that would be my first piece of advice. Secondly, create. You know, get some tracks in your library that are of some quality, and write more than you think you have to, and record and all that, because you're going to want to pick the cream of the crop, because obviously nobody has everything they create is top quality. You've always got some stuff. You listen to it and go, and it's merely average. You don't want merely average. You want good. You want really good. Because we have more musicians creating more music than at any point in history. We're also having more music being consumed than at any point in history. So that's kind of cool. So those two, and then don't try to, I think my other piece of advice would be, don't try to spread yourself too thin. Don't try to hit 1,000 libraries. Pick three.
Right.
And then see if that works out. And then, you know, once you get in those three and you've got a process going, because you're going to need to track which song is with which library. And how does this library work? I mean, I've got a file for each library I'm in. Here's the address, here's my username and password, here's what they like. You know, do they want WAV files? Do they want 320-bit, kilobit MP3s? You know, what's the process? That kind of thing.
Right, right. And, you know, talking about quality for a second, I wouldn't even think to mention this, but you just triggered an idea. When people talk about what you want your stuff to sound obviously as good as possible. Not only does the song have to be a good song, but, you know, the recording quality should be of the highest quality. But that doesn't mean today you have to go to a multi-million dollar studio to do this. I mean, with technology, you can do this in the comfort of your own home with a little bit of knowledge and a little bit of practice. You can make what we consider an industry standard recording. What's your opinion on that? How can it be in, you know, for most music libraries, can it be a demo sounding type thing? Does it have to be a broadcast quality? What is your feeling on that?
I think demo is not going to be good enough, but demo now means something totally different from the four-track cassette days.
right.
So, well, give you a case in point, I've got a project studio just outside my house. We call it, it's in an outbuilding out back. We call it the outhouse. Has no plumbing, but it has air conditioning.
Right.
But that's where I record. And it's basically, I have a little two input, it's a M-Audio audio file, FireWire. And that's how I get audio into the computer. You know, I'm using SoftSense, I'm using computers and, you know, keyboards and all that because I'm a keyboard player. And I've been able to come up with some pretty awesome stuff, if I do say so myself.
Right.
but, you know, is it as good as I could have done, you know, in a multi-million dollar studio? Maybe not, but it was a heck of a lot cheaper, and I could take my time and make sure it was exactly right. So I think overall, for what I'm doing, the quality is probably better. So get it as good a quality as you can. That would be my best advice. You know, invest in the equipment that gives you some good quality results.
Right. And I guess, you know, again, today with, you know, if you have a computer, and who doesn't, right, today, for 500 bucks, maybe you can get yourself, you know, a two input interface, some recording software, and depending on the instrument that you play, if you're in keyboards, you can just go direct from the keyboard into the interface. If you're doing guitar, maybe you need a mic or so, and or vocals. And I mean, but real literally, for $500, you can get the equipment that you need to get yourself going to make something that's of high enough quality to get into television and film. And the other thing to keep in mind when we talk about broadcast quality, the quality that you need if you're going to release and Tom, you would know this because you release CDs as well. The quality of sound, or the recording and the sound quality of a piece of music that you're going to sell to the public, like the typical way on a CD, is far different than the quality that you would need to be the bed track of a TV commercial. Because the music in a TV commercial is, it's exactly that. It's usually the bed track. There's usually dialogue going over the top of it. And it's just filler music. Now, that's not to say that it can sound like garbage. It's still got to sound good. It's got to sound professional. But today, you can do this, and I wouldn't suggest anybody really go pay a lot of money at a studio to record a track that you're, you know, little tracks that you're going to try to, you know, send in to be submitted to TV and film and licensing, because you really don't need to do that. With the technology today, like I was just saying, you could get the equipment that will produce a more than, you know, acceptable quality of recording for licensing purposes. So. You don't want to settle and just send up any old garbage. But you know, it's got to be mixed right and it's got to sound good. But you can definitely do that in your own project studio, and you don't necessarily need to come to a studio to do that.
And I have heard of guys, they'll start out in their home studio, and basically they'll bring in individual tracks to a local studio that's, you know, medium quality, charges 40 bucks an hour. And in an hour, you know, they slap it up on the really nice monitors and they can get it mixed and all that. So the cool thing about the technology now, you've got so many options for how to make it happen.
Right. That's, and, yeah.
If you're in a town with a lot of people who are willing to help each other out, you know, advice, you know, what do you think? Well, I think you ought to do this or that. You know, it's always good to ask questions.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Well, Tom, you know, I really do appreciate your time. I know you're a busy guy, and I appreciate you contacting me on LinkedIn, which, again, you know, kind of referring back to people, go out to those social networks. You meet a lot of great people, and a lot of people willing to help, and a lot of people willing to donate their time, as Tom did tonight, for a good cause, to try to help people, you know, here in this great state of Connecticut, help people who want to get into music licensing that really don't know anything about it. This was kind of, you know, our second part of what I think will be a 3 or 4 part series on how you get involved. So, Tom, I really do appreciate you spending some time with me and just talking about your experiences and how you're doing. And I wish you all the luck in the world, and I hope you get a lot of placements in the real near future.
Likewise, and right back at you.
Yeah, and when you do, definitely come back on the show. Tell us, maybe we'll follow up with you in a few months and see how things are going. You could kind of be our case study, you know, how are you doing and what are you doing different? You learned anything new, or you have any more tips and tricks you might be able to give our listeners? That would be a great thing as well.
Anytime.
All right. Well, that's great, Tom. Well, I appreciate your time, and tune in next week for part 3 of this ever-growing topic of music licensing and publishing, and we will be back right after this.
Are you a Connecticut musician or in a Connecticut band? Want to have your music featured on our podcast? Then go to www.visionrecordingstudios.com and go to the podcast page. There you will find all the information you need to get your band and your music on our show. That's www.visionrecordingstudios.com. This exclusive podcast was brought to you by VisionRecordingStudios.com. Visit Vision Recording Studios for all your recording needs. That's www.visionrecordingstudios.com.